This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. Glad you're with us. I'm Jane Hamden. You can't talk about economic vitality of a city without talking about public schools. Milwaukee's school choice program was in the news last month after a study from the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, a supporter of school choice, issued a report from researcher David Dodenhoff.
The key message coming out of David's study was that you can't expect parental choice in the public schools to be the silver bullet that everyone seems to be looking for as far as educational reform.
That's George Lightborn, a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. The study found that many parents don't take advantage of available choices, and the system is not making MPS any better. All this week and next on Lake Effect, we're examining economic development in Milwaukee as part of our series, Project Milwaukee. Howard Fuller is a former Milwaukee Public Schools superintendent and a supporter of school choice. We invited him to talk about the crisis of quality in the city's schools and the limitations of choice.
For several years, I've been trying to make the argument that I don't think the value of the choice program, I'm now talking about the voucher program or independent charters, I don't think that those programs, that their value to the community should be judged on whether or not they improve MPS. And what I was trying to say is that I think back in the beginning when we first started talking about this, that we may have been a little bit overly optimistic about the impact of the competitive pressures on improving MPS. But what's important for people to understand is that was never the sole basis for people saying that this is a program that we ought to have in Milwaukee. The argument was that what we were having was not working. And most important for me, we need to give low-income and working-class parents some of the opportunities to choose that those of us with money have.
Well, let's break it down a little bit. You were hoping in the very beginning, everybody was hoping that if parents had a choice, mm-hmm. they would make wise decisions, and mm-hmm. that would eventually, if you believe in the market economy model, that would eventually weed out the inferior schools, and parents would keep picking the better schools, and the other ones would fold or go away. You're saying that...
Well, first of all, I never bought that. I mean, see, you have to realize that just like in the non-choice world, in the choice world, there are those of us who have very different views about why we need to have this. So, for example, there are clearly people who have a free market ideology. People like me always saw this as a social justice issue, that if rich people in this country have the ability to choose, then we ought to create the opportunity for low-income and working-class people to have choices. And I understand that in a democracy and in a real world, people don't always make wise choices. I mean, that's sort of the nature of democracy. You give people options. You hope that they will, you know, make the best choices. But in reality, people don't always make the best choices.
Well, sure. Let me put it this way, then. Are you disappointed that parents in Milwaukee public schools, after all these years of having choice, haven't made better choices?
Well, see, first of all, I'm not clear that that's true. See, now, I'm not clear that the data that they give us means that people are not making choices. And you have to understand, I did my dissertation on the discriminatory implementation of desegregation. And one of the concepts that I use was a concept called forced choice, where what you do is you send parents a letter and you say, You can choose from amongst these three entities, but don't really take choice number one because you're not likely to get it. So see there's a lot of subtleties to how choice has operated even within MPS that wasn't dealt with in that study because it was done based on a statistical extrapolation, not a real life analysis of what actually goes on.
Well, then let's forget about that and look at real life.
Yes.
You know, in real life in mm-hmm. Milwaukee, even if parents have a dozen schools to choose from, mm-hmm. do they really? Because would they know how to get their students there? Would they know that the school exists? Do they have the education background to seek out that information?
Well, here's the thing I think is important, is that we always do this when we have discussions because we have to. We use the term parents. And what we do is almost by definition make all parents the same. You know, parents don't do this. Well, the reality of it is that there are clearly parents who are making choices. People who, you know, people chose to go to Golda Meir. People chose to go to many of the magnet schools with an MPS. People chose to go to their neighborhood school, because that's one of the things that study does. It assumes that if you go to a neighborhood school, you didn't make a choice. But there are people who've actually chosen to go to neighborhood schools.
Because there's value in walking to school.
Or for whatever their reasons. And one of the things that's very interesting is that nationally, when people say, why do parents choose schools? There's all kinds of reasons. Safety. For example, when I was superintendent and the Jeffrey Dahmer thing happened, all of a sudden there was a increase in the number of people who wanted their kids bused. They didn't want their kids walking because they were afraid for safety. There's people who choose schools based on whether or not it's an early start school or a late start school, and that's based on their work schedule. That's not to say that people don't look at academic achievement as a critical issue, but I would argue that people look at certain other things first. For example, it is logical for a parent to say, I want my child to be in a school that I think is safe. Once I know that my child's in a place that's safe, then I can start being concerned about, okay, how well is he or she doing academically? So we shouldn't act as if parents don't have a lot of factors in their heads when they're trying to make choices. And we also have to be clear that not all parents are able to use anything in the best way. And so you can always have some parents who do better than other parents in making decisions about what to do with their children. But the fact that that is true would not be a rationale to not have it, you know, because everybody doesn't do it as well as we think they should.
So by your measure of giving poor parents and people who don't have power within the community a choice,
yes,
by offering them a choice, yes, has this program succeeded in the last decade?
Well, see, now we have to ask which program, because if we're now talking about the Milwaukee Pro-Choice program, the fact that 19,000 kids are in a program that has been capped means that there are a lot of parents out there who are making choices about where they want to send their kids. And let me just take a moment and say this, because I have to say, the real tragedy of the discussion that you and I are having right now is we ought to be having a discussion about how is this community going to address the crisis that we have in the education of our children. But because choice is such a polarized political issue, it forces people like myself and others who care deeply about these kids not to be sitting down with people who care equally deeply in the Milwaukee public schools. Because what we ought to be doing is sitting down together talking about how do we use the tools that we have in this community to ensure that our children get educated. But that's not the discussion we're having. It's choice is a problem because, MPS is a problem because. And in the midst of this adult conversation, our children are continuing not to be educated, which increases the crisis that we have in our community.
Okay, let's move on to that point then. Why aren't these two sides, all of whom care about the education of children in Milwaukee public schools? You're the expert. You've been in the system for years. Why aren't all these people sitting
Because
down?
Of the politics of it. Because now choice, for example, has been defined as a Republican issue. And so, therefore, if you are a loyal Democrat, you must necessarily be opposed. There are people in the district who believe that choice, quote, takes money from the district. There are those of us—
Or siphons off the best students.
Which is totally untrue, and there's all kinds of data about that. There are people on our side who believe that MPS can't do what it needs to do. And so what you have, unfortunately, is that we've chosen sides not based on what would be best for the children of this community, but based on our political persuasions, our ideological persuasions, our philosophical persuasions. And all I'm trying to suggest is, having been the superintendent, so I've been on, quote, that side, always been a supporter of choice, I have never believed that these two things are mutually exclusive. I actually believe that there is a way for us to have a conversation in this community that would allow us to use the various options and to focus on quality. Because the problem that we have is that we have schools in MPS that are not quality schools. We have schools that participate in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program that are not quality schools. We have good schools in MPS. We have good schools who participate in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. But we're not having a discussion in this community around quality and how to increase quality and how to use that to force a different dynamic for our kids. We're having a discussion around the politics of choice or the politics of MPS. And unfortunately, that discussion precludes people sitting down to talk about what are we going to do about our kids.
Well, you're a person of standing in the community and a former superintendent. Why can't you pick up the phone and call William Andrikopoulos and say, we're going to start this, we're all going to get together? What is stopping all these people
from
talking to each
other? Well, I mean,
Bill
and I can talk because we're friends, but Bill works for a school board. And a school board doesn't necessarily share our view of togetherness. I mean, there are people on that school board, if you mention my name, they go into convulsions. And I understand it. I mean, I'm not whining about it. It's a reality. While I may have standing, I also have baggage. And the baggage comes from the fact that I have views that many people in this community believe in and many people in this community don't believe in. And I've never been one to shy away from saying exactly what I think and trying to act on that basis. What this requires, unfortunately, is a level of political leadership and statesmanship and statewomanship that we do not currently have in the leadership elements in our community. And that is unfortunate, but I think that's the reality.
Howard Fuller is the former superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools, and he's founder of the Institute for the Transformation of Learning at Marquette University. In a moment, if he could restructure Milwaukee Public Schools, what he would do. Our conversation continues in a moment on Lake Effect from WUWM. Lake Effect continues now. I'm Jane Hamden. More of my conversation with Howard Fuller, founder of the Institute for the Transformation of Learning at Marquette University, school choice supporter, and former superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools. Before the break, Fuller talked about the leadership vacuum he perceives in the community and how it hinders the ability to make progress in improving education. I asked him if he could change the structure of Milwaukee Public Schools and had a school board on his side, how would he do it?
Well, first of all, and there's actually a report that my wife and I worked on nationally several years ago, put out by the Education Commission of the States, where we sat on a panel with union members, with school board members. It was a diverse panel, and we locked heads, but we came up with a way to restructure the educational systems in various communities. So, for example, if I was the czar and people say, oh, okay, you're in charge. What I, in fact, would do would be to create a community board for education. And what that community board for education would do is be responsible for the education of all of the kids, no matter whether they're in private schools or public schools or charter schools, wherever. And the notion would be to say, for example, we got 150,000 kids that have to be educated in this community. We're going to create an environment that will allow for requests for proposals. They could come from the union. They could come from business. They could come from collaborators of educators. I would create a financial structure that would put a premium on educating the hardest to educate kids. So that means that if you request to work with these kids, you're going to get additional dollars because of the need that these kids have and the kind of work that you're going to have to do with them. And in essence, what you would do is you would create an environment where we would eliminate the geographic definition of a district, meaning you could have, say, several schools that would collaborate together to bring in a proposal irrespective of whether or not they were inside of MPS or private school or public school.
And well, it also, let me just stop a minute. It sounds like you're saying people who want to work with a certain population
correct.
Within the schools, you're matching up the kids who are tough with the people who really
right. and,
want to
right.
spend
and,
the day
and,
with
and
them.
And you'd create financial incentives for people to work with those kids. And in essence, what you would end up with is a contract with every entity that was going to come forward to educate kids. And the board would no longer be it would be a policymaking board, but it would be much more of a monitoring board, because what you in essence would do would be to monitor the contracts that you have. The role of whoever the director, superintendent, whatever you would call it, that person would have a smaller staff of people whose objective would be to monitor the contractual relationships with those entities. What you also then would do is you would free up people to go out and seek if the building needed repair, you would be able to do bids in a broader market. You would allow the people, for example, who have tremendous capacity, who currently work in facilities at MPS, to create an entity that would basically go out in the marketplace, so to speak, to take bids to do their work. You'd have to totally reconstruct what we have. What I'm talking about is probably politically impossible.
But you're talking about privatizing.
No, I'm talking about redefining what makes it public. See, because I would have a public entity that would ultimately be responsible. It's just that the public would not restrict the services to the public to only government-run entities. But you would have a public entity that would have ultimate oversight over the public dollars.
It's really interesting. You know what it sounds like to me? It kind of sounds like W-2.
No, I think what the difference is that what you do is you have contracts based on performance. It's almost like a charter. In the city, when we give schools a charter, we develop what is basically a performance contract. I mean, you have to do certain things. If you don't do that, then you know you're eligible to lose your authorization to continue. It's really a public-private construction. Instead of having the lines drawn, this is public and this is private, I would blur those lines to create new types of entities, including virtual entities that could educate kids.
Can any of your ideas for reform ever be compatible with the teachers' union?
Yeah, I mean, it could, because my view would be, and I know people, this is going to sound strange to people, but I'm really not anti-union. I mean, I have a clear understanding as to why teachers' unions were formed. I think at the point that we moved to a strict wages, hours, and working conditions, it changed the nature of the relationship of unions to the community and to the structure. But what I would do is make an argument that what you would do is you would look at the union almost as you look at craft unions. In other words, the union would say, what we're going to do is we're going to take the responsibility to make sure that the teachers who come out of our, quote, union hall are going to have these skills. What you would allow is you would allow entities to decide, do they want to have a union, but it wouldn't be a union to cover everybody. Each school would, in essence, negotiate its own contract. And if you were going to have a central union, it would be a much smaller contract, and the real definition of work rules would take place in the individual schools. Plus, the union would have the ability, like anyone else, to go out and form schools. So, to me, it would be ludicrous to say what we're going to do is get rid of unions. Because, first of all, that's not going to happen. And I don't think it should. It's a question of redefining what the role would be.
But would WEAC ever listen to that kind of a proposal?
I doubt it. I mean, I don't. I think there's very few people that would listen. But you asked me, what would I do? You know, so I'm not saying that. I actually think parts of this already exist in different places in the country. The issue is whether
Like where? Do you have examples?
Yeah, like in Philadelphia, like in Chicago. I mean, one of the things that Chicago did, they made a decision that they were going to take their 100 worst schools, and they created a thing called Renaissance 2010. And what they basically did was to say, we're going to take these 100 worst schools, and we're going to allow people to come forward from a number of different venues to give us a proposal to take over these schools. What I'm talking about would take all of that a step further and look at a totally redesigned community entity that would be responsible for educating all of the kids.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing these views.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Howard Fuller is founder of the Institute for the Transformation of Learning at Marquette University and a supporter of school choice. He's a former superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools. WUWM's Project Milwaukee coverage continues tomorrow on Lake Effect with former Milwaukee City Planner Peter Park. He has moved on to Denver, a fast-growing city with a different set of challenges. We'll talk with him about Milwaukee's potential when it comes to the built environment. And coming up next on Lake Effect, favorite books about famous crimes on the shelves of the Milwaukee Public Library. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.